It's Friday, July 16th. I'm Stephen Fee, and this is The Pen Pod, a podcast from Pen America. On today's edition, Bring Danny Home. We talk to artist and cartoonist Amy Kurzweil to get the latest on her cousin, arrested journalist Danny Fenster, who was detained in Myanmar earlier this spring, what you can do to demand his freedom. Then, tough questions. Summer Lopez of Pen America joins to discuss Iran's brazen attempt to kidnap a U.S. citizen and journalist, raids on human rights groups in Belarus, and the long arm of authoritarianism. I'm Stephen Fee. All that coming up on this edition of the Pen Pod. Earlier this spring, the managing editor of Frontier Myanmar, a news website in the country, was arrested before he could board an international flight. Since then, Danny Fenster's family and friends have mounted a campaign for his release. Cartoonist and writer Amy Kurzweil is Fenster's cousin and is collecting a growing gallery of illustrated portraits of Danny on the family's website, bringdannyhome.com. Amy Kurzweil joins me now. Amy, welcome to the Pen Pod.
Hi, Stephen. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about Danny.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And before we talk about his arrest in particular, tell me a bit about Danny Fenster as a journalist.
Yeah, happy to. I'll tell you a little bit about Danny as a person and as a journalist, because the two definitely go together. The first thing that I want to say about Danny is that I would say he's someone who's always reading about the world, always reading about people around him. And he's extremely unpretentious for somebody who is so intellectual, which is one of the things that I think strikes people most about Danny. We come from a family of immigrants. Our grandmother is a Holocaust survivor. And there's this kind of tradition of struggle in our family that I think Danny has picked up on as a journalist. He's drawn to stories of regular people who are in difficult situations, who are struggling for dignity and their quality of life. Some of the things he's worked on in the past, he lived in Louisiana. He wrote for the New Iberian, profiled victims of gun violence. He's lived in San Jose, California, and profiled people experiencing homelessness. And when he's done these kinds of stories where he's sort of down on the ground with people who are living in really difficult situations, he just tries to get to know people and spend time with them as individuals. So he's always been interested in kind of dignifying personal experience and, bringing some humanity to difficult situations. And I think part of the reason why he's been able to sort of tell these kinds of stories is because he himself lives such an unpretentious life. People like, we in our family, we sort of like to joke about the different places that Danny has lived. So like he's lived in a van. One of the funnest details of Danny is that he made his home temporarily in a friend's hot tub.
Sure.
Which is like, he just doesn't like to take up too much space. And I think this just kind of gives him a sort of access to people who maybe need to take up more space. He kind of makes space for people who are in difficult situations. And that's part of the reason why I think he was drawn to Myanmar. I mean, one reason is that he's an adventurer and he was drawn to live somewhere completely different and get to know a culture that's completely different. But I think in Myanmar, he saw this kind of unpretentious life that he was seeking, and he wanted to get to know another country just full of people who were facing instability and struggle as their political system changes. Danny went out to Myanmar before the coup, so he's been there for over 2 years. And he saw this coup happen around him. And he was just interested in sort of profiling daily life of people living with change in their country. And so that's what he was doing when he was detained. Regular life in Myanmar. That's what he was writing about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when did you first hear about Danny's arrest and what's happened since then? What do we know about Danny's condition?
Right. So I heard about Danny's arrest right after it happened. I got a text from my brother, which was a link to one of the first articles that was written about it. So it happened right away. My cousin Brian, Danny's brother, heard about it from Danny's employers at Frontier Myanmar. Frontier Myanmar put out a statement right away. It got covered right away, which we were grateful for. And my brother just texted me, just imagine breakfast on Monday morning and getting this kind of text about your cousin being detained in a foreign prison. It was really scary. And our lives have been pretty consumed with it ever since. It's been almost 7 weeks. We have a small family team of people who've been working really hard trying to talk to the right people. We feel confident that we're talking to the right people. We've had a lot of support from Congress, from the State Department, from the White House. And we're even though we feel like we're talking to all the right people, we're extremely frustrated at how little movement we feel there's been. Danny is, it took a month for him to even get a consular visit. At the consular visit, we were really happy and felt positive that Danny was okay. It was important, eventually for his parents to get to hear his voice. But now there is a wave of COVID spreading across Myanmar, and we have heard that Insein prison is being affected pretty profoundly. We know that Danny was experiencing COVID-like symptoms, which is something we heard from our consulate. And we don't really have any other updates other than that. So we're really, really concerned. I mean, I would say this is like a moment of our highest concern, because this Delta variant is scary. Danny is unvaccinated. We can't get him vaccinated. Our embassy is trying to get him vaccinated. And all we've heard is he had COVID-like symptoms, and we don't really know anything else. So it's not good. We're not feeling easy about this. We are hopeful because we feel we have all the right people helping us, but very concerned.
Clearly, I mean, and it's distressing, and I feel for you and your family. I mean, obviously, though, it's part of this broader crackdown, right? I mean, on not just Danny, but writers and journalists and free speech in general in Myanmar. You know, how do you feel Danny's work? You mentioned this a bit, but how do you feel his work helps the world better understand what's happening in that country, and why? I won't ask you to speak for the government, but why do you think people like Danny are targets?
I mean, getting into the mind of, the regime over there is very, very difficult and not something I'm prepared to do. But I think that journalists are being arrested in order to, send a message about sort of free and open speech and dialogue. And it feels very random to us. And I think that's the part that is so difficult, is the randomness of Danny's arrest, especially because he's not even somebody who was out in the street demonstrating. He was just behind a desk doing a job. So the randomness of it is distressing because of the kind of chaos that you imagine that randomness represents. And I think, we need journalists like Danny to just be doing the work that they were doing and sort of letting the world know what it's like for regular people in Myanmar right now. And, hopefully in spotlighting the things that are happening day to day on the street with, just people living their lives, we can get a better picture of what it's really like for people over there. And that can help the world better understand how to support people over there.
Finally, what are the next steps here? How can we at PEN America, how can our members join the call for Danny's freedom?
Yeah, thank you for asking. And also thank you so much for having me on here. My family's really appreciative of all the opportunities we have to talk about this because, we feel that the thing that helps the most is just keeping Danny's story alive. I mean, Danny has been detained for practicing, free and fair speech, and we feel that free and fair speech is the thing that will hopefully usher his, his welcome home. So please continue to talk about the story. This is a moment where we need to be aware of how sort of tenuous his situation is with COVID. So tweeting, you know, retweeting, going to bringdannyhome.com, and, you know, following what's going on. You can also sign our petition, which we have posted on our website. And I've been, you know, as an artist, all I can do is kind of speak with my craft. So I've put out the call for people to draw portraits of Danny, because I think that, you know, can help us feel close to him and help us remember that he is a real person who's having a real situation. So if you're an artist and you like to draw, please draw a portrait of Danny and post it on anywhere on social and tag me at Amy Kurzweil and use the hashtag Bring Danny Home. I think if we just keep talking about this, sign the petition, that's really all we can do. I wish there was more we could do, but that's what we have right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And folks can, of course, see some of those illustrations both on pen.org that then links to bringdannyhome.com. Cartoonist and writer Amy Kurzweil. Again, the website is bringdannyhome.com. Check it out. Share. If you're an illustrator, illustrate, share the word. We're standing with you and your family and all those detained in Myanmar unjustly. Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Every week, we put our tough questions about free speech from the past week to PEN America CEO Suzanne Nossel. But Suzanne is on a richly deserved holiday, so joining us today is PEN America's Senior Director of Free Expression Programs, Summer Lopez. Summer, welcome to the PEN Pod for the first time.
Thank you so much, Stephen. I'm thrilled to be here.
Likewise. So let's dive right in with some somber news. I mean, you just heard Amy Kurzweil talking about the arrested journalist and her cousin, Danny Fenster, in Myanmar. You know, it seems like the coup leaders in Myanmar are virtually immune to public pressure. You know, what can PEN America do or press governments to do to free not just Danny, but writers and journalists and other dissidents currently being detained?
Yes, you're right that the junta seems alarmingly resistant, I think, to the increasing international outrage. I think they have support coming from China and Russia, and they probably feel they can withstand the pressure from other sources. But that doesn't mean it's impossible to change their calculations or that diplomatic or advocacy efforts aren't still incredibly important. And we know from our experience working to free imprisoned writers that even the most intransigent regimes can be moved to take action if the cost-benefit calculation changes for them, right? We have seen it work even in places like Russia, where you might not think it would be very effective. So what we know is that it's essential to keep these cases in the spotlight, to keep talking about Danny's case and all the political prisoners in Myanmar right now, keeping their names on social media, keeping them in the news, just making sure that this doesn't kind of fall off the radar, and continuing to call on the US and other governments to keep up the pressure on the junta. We've also been told over the years by people whose cases we've worked on that when they were imprisoned, knowing these advocacy campaigns were happening on their behalf really helped them to keep going. So it's also just vital that we keep up the pressure for the individuals themselves. It can be a really powerful source of reassurance and strength for people who are facing such unimaginable hardship. And I mean, one thing I think is interesting is that, you know, in June, the military in Myanmar threatened legal action against foreign news outlets if they referred to the coup as a coup or called the junta a junta, basically.
Right.
And which is obviously just a bit of kind of typical Orwellian theater, but it also does demonstrate that they care, right? They care how they're represented and seen on the global stage. They want to be seen as the legitimate leaders of this country. And that gives the international community leverage that they should not squander. You know, I think autocratic regimes are always the most sensitive. So while there's definitely a problematic dynamic here where they gain a certain degree of immunity from the support they have from Russia and China, the idea that the rest of the international community has no leverage or that the regime can't be influenced and doesn't really care at all about what anyone says, I don't believe that's 100% true.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's keeping hopeful for Danny and others. I mean,
yes.
Let's spin the globe a bit. I mean, this week, a court in New York unsealed an indictment against four Iranian agents. U.S. government lawyers allege they were plotting to kidnap from Brooklyn a journalist, writer, and activist who frequently is critical of Iran's government. This seems like an extraordinary threat to anyone who dares speak out anywhere in the world. What do we know about Iran's track record for this kind of brazenness, and what's emboldening them?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're absolutely right. It's an extraordinary demonstration of the threats that dissidents everywhere face today. And it's honestly just chilling that the Iranian government would think they could get away with kidnapping somebody who's an American citizen from her home in Brooklyn. It's pretty terrifying. But none of this is unprecedented for Iran. I mean, this is something they've been doing for decades. One of the most horrendous recent examples is the case of the journalist Ruhul Azam, who had been living in France. And in 2019, Iranian officials used a ploy to lure him to Iraq. And he was abducted there, brought back to Iran, and put on trial. He had run a Telegram channel that was critical of the government and played a role in the anti-government protests in 2017 and 2018. And for that, he was found guilty of charges called corruption on Earth, and Iranian authorities executed him in December of last year. It's just an absolutely horrifying case, and it really demonstrates the level of risk that we're talking about here. And just last month, the BBC actually appealed to the UN for help safeguarding its BBC Persian service staff, who it said had been threatened with kidnapping from London by Iranian intelligence agents. So they've been engaged in these kind of extraterritorial attacks for a long time. But I do think the brazenness we're seeing in these recent examples is different. And I think it's part of a broader trend we're seeing in which authoritarian regimes really want to extend the reach of their repression across borders and even into democratic countries. We saw this, obviously, you know, just a few months ago with the Belarusian regime going so far as to force a commercial airliner out of the air to detain a blogger. And of course, the most high-profile case, and the one I unfortunately think really served to embolden a lot of these regimes, was the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. I think these governments are trying to send a clear message that you're not safe or free, no matter where you go, to dissidents. And for anyone who fights for human rights and free expression or cares about the future of democracy, that's a really deeply alarming prospect. And unfortunately, I think the international community and especially democratic countries have failed to take action in response in ways that would really send a sufficiently unequivocal message that these acts won't be tolerated and that they will have consequences. The international community really failed to hold Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to account for Khashoggi's murder. And the Trump administration in particular really was unwilling to respond in any meaningful way. And that sends a dangerous signal. So if they're feeling, you know, if these regimes are feeling they can engage in this type of behavior with impunity, that's a failure of the international community. I think the silver lining about this week's news is that these indictments hopefully start to send a different message. We need to see more action like that and to see governments make clear commitments to protecting dissidents and writers and journalists in exile from these sorts of threats and holding those behind them to account.
Right. I mean, the fact that this indictment was unsealed, maybe these folks never face trial, but the fact that these steps are being taken and publicized anyway might do some good.
Right. I think even symbolically, it's important. And I think the other thing, you know, these examples are really, they're authoritarian regimes telling on themselves to some extent, right? I mean, what does it say that the Iranian regime would go to these lengths, risk this degree of global opprobrium to kidnap Mahsa Alinejad, a writer who is armed only with her words and her writing and her messages of hope? And I think, you know, all that does is make clear how powerful those things are. It exposes her strength and makes them, you know, exposes their actual weakness.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, finally, in yet another sort of authoritarian turn, in Belarus this week, police carried out sweeping raids on human rights organizations, media groups, detaining, you know, last count, at least a dozen people, targeting at least 20 organizations, includes groups that have been working to expose that government's crimes. How is that, you know, how is it that even with major national pressure, this crackdown in Belarus keeps going?
Well, again, I think we're seeing a situation where, not unlike Myanmar, the Belarusian regime on its own might be more vulnerable to significant international pressure, but they also have the backing of an important ally. And so I think they feel largely immune. Russia is the key player here. And we know that Putin has been offering his support, including large infusions of funding to Lukashenko to counter the effects of sanctions and other pressures from the international community. And we have seen the international community take action and speak out here, which is good. We actually, PEN America organized an event a few weeks ago on the sidelines of the Human Rights Council, and it featured a raft of foreign ministers from across Europe, the U.S. Undersecretary of State. It was a really remarkable demonstration of solidarity with the Belarusian people and expressions of deep concern over the ongoing repression. So we need that to continue. I think Belarus has gone under the radar for so long, despite being this brutal autocracy in the middle of Europe. But democratic governments need to keep their eye on the ball at this time and keep the pressure not just on Lukashenko, but on Putin for his role in what has really just been a relentless crackdown on dissidents and protesters, but also on writers and artists and musicians.
Yeah, well, tough week, more to come, certainly. Summer Lopez is Senior Director of Free Expression Programs at PEN America, joining us this week for Tough Questions. Thanks so much, Summer.
Thank you, Stephen.
And that's our episode for Friday, July 16th. Join us next week for the PEN Pod. You can listen to all our episodes at PEN.org. Follow us at PEN America on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm Stephen Fee for PEN America. This is the PEN Pod. See you soon.